Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we cut through all the noise, all the information out there, and give you the clearest, most compelling analysis we can.
And right now, the baseball world is just spinning. I mean, it's an absolute whirlwind.
It really is. The World Series just ended, and we're already, what, knee-deep in the off-season build for 2026. The hot stove is, it's blazing.
It's the most high-stakes time of the year for these front offices. The GM meetings are done, all the major awards have been handed out.
Right.
And now the biggest free agents are already kicking up these huge, potentially league-altering rumors.
So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We're going to unpack the biggest news, celebrate the award winners from the 2025 season.
And more importantly, I think, dig into the really compelling free agency and trade rumors that are shaping the entire competitive landscape.
Exactly. We're giving you a shortcut to being instantly up to speed on who's spending, who's selling, and, you know, why.
Let's start with the hardware then.
Yeah, let's do it. The 2025 season gave us a ton of drama, and the awards are all official now. It was a year that really showcased, I think, both generational talent and the next wave of superstars.
Oh, absolutely. And you have to start with the MVPs, where we just saw some massive historical significance play out.
Okay.
In the American League, you've got Aaron Judge of the Yankees. He took home his third career AL MVP.
Just third. But what's so fascinating about that one is how close the vote was, right?
Incredibly tight. He just, and I mean, just edged out the catcher, Cal Raleigh.
That close margin really speaks to the quality of the competition.
Yeah.
Raleigh had an unbelievable year behind the plate, but Judge just feels like this perpetual force.
He is.
His presence just elevates that entire lineup. So what was the defining factor that pushed Judge over the top for number three, even with Raleigh bringing that premium defense?
I think it really came down to the sheer offensive volume that Judge provides. You can't ignore it. And, you know, that's compounded by his established brand, his perceived value to the team.
Sure.
While Raleigh had a magnificent season, providing that elite catcher defense and some surprising power, Judge's overall offensive numbers were just, they were too immense to ignore.
The plate discipline, the single swing impact.
Exactly. And his leadership in that Yankees lineup, three MVP trophies, I mean, that solidifies him as one of the defining figures of this whole generation.
And speaking of defining figures, over in the National League, the outcome was maybe a little less suspenseful, just significant historically.
That's Shohei Ohtani of the Dodgers. He took home the NL MVP, and that is his fourth career MVP.
Four. You just have to pause and let that sink in.
You really do. Four MVPs, and he's still in his late 20s. This achievement puts him in the rarest of air. We're talking about names like Barry Bonds, maybe even tying Mike Trout, depending on how you count them.
And the consistency of that elite production, even though he was mostly DH in 2025 because of his recovery, it just continues to redefine what you can expect from a modern player.
Completely.
Incredible. Okay, so moving to pitching excellence, the Cy Young races gave us a glimpse into the future, I think, especially in the National League.
Oh, yeah. On the NL side, the young phenom, Paul Skeens of the Pirates, was the undisputed winner.
And this is a massive development for Pittsburgh. It gives them an identity for the next decade with a true elite arm.
He dominated from start to finish, fulfilled all that massive hype that followed him since his debut. Meanwhile, in the American League, the award went to Tarek Skubal of the Tigers.
Both are just foundational pieces that their franchises are going to try and build their entire 2026 rotations around.
Precisely. And those wins, they're huge, not just for the players, but for the organization's ability to recruit talent and build confidence. It gives a smaller market team like Pittsburgh a tangible star to point to.
Totally. And let's not forget the new blood and the managers who drove those successful seasons. I mean, the Rookie of the Year awards always have that extra layer of intrigue because of what it means for service time.
So who are the top rookies?
Nick Kurtz took the AL Rookie of the Year award. And this is so important because winning guarantees his club a full year of service time.
Right. So he accrues value immediately and you avoid any of that service time manipulation talk.
Mm. Exactly. And over in the NL, Drake Baldwin of the Braves won Rookie of the Year. And this is where we need to get into the weeds a little bit.
Okay.
This victory is a major structural win for Atlanta, not just for Baldwin, but because it secures them a prospect promotion incentive pick. a PPI pick.
Okay, let's unpack that. For listeners who might have heard the term but don't know the specifics, what exactly is the benefit for the Braves? Why does this rule even exist?
Well, it's a mechanism from the latest collective bargaining agreement, and it's meant to incentivize teams to call up their top prospects earlier.
Instead of waiting a few weeks to get that extra year of team control.
Exactly. The rule basically says, if a player on the MLB Top 100 prospect list gets promoted early and then goes on to win Rookie of the Year, or even finishes high in the MVP voting before arbitration, the team gets an extra first-round draft pick.
So it's a reward for prioritizing winning now over, you know, those service time games.
100%. For the Braves, getting that PPI pick, which is usually a competitive balance pick right outside the first round, and it carries huge trade value and cost control, it's invaluable.
It's a bonus piece of premium young talent, completely free. Just because they brought Baldwin up and he balled out.
It makes the Rookie of the Year honor so much sweeter than just the individual recognition.
No doubt. That's a huge strategic win for Atlanta.
And finally, we have to give a nod to the guys in the dugout who steered these teams.
Pat Murphy and Stephen Vogt earned the Manager of the Year awards. Both had just outstanding seasons, leading their clubs, navigating the complexities of a 162-game schedule.
And managing those modern pitching staff workloads, keeping the clubhouse chemistry positive, it's a tough job.
It really is. And their wins show that both veteran leadership and new managerial blood can get it done.
Okay, so with the hardware all handed out, let's pivot. Let's talk about the postseason fallout.
The immediate fallout.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have this incredibly emotional end to the World Series, right? The Dodgers win it all.
And the Blue Jays are just one hit short.
Yeah.
Agonizing.
Just agonizing. You can already see that driving everything they're doing. Both clubs are being super aggressive right out of the gate. That memory of Game 7 is fueling every decision.
The contrast in how they're approaching it is fascinating. You've got the Dodgers managing success and some turnover, while the Blue Jays are just spending, fueled by that sheer competitive agony.
Let's start with the champs. Okay. Let's appreciate what the Dodgers did and focus on the immediate roster consequences of their title.
Absolutely. And when you look at that Dodgers roster right after the championship, there's one guy who stands out as the ultimate unlikely hero, veteran infielder Miguel Rojas.
His story is one that I think GM should be studying very closely this offseason.
The story of Rojas is massive, and it's really relevant to a discussion we'll have later about the value of utility players versus stars. He's a free agent, and his contribution to that championship was just, it was profound.
Forget the regular season stats for a minute. Just focus on the clutch factor.
And the clutch moment being that game-tying home run in the ninth inning of Game 7.
I mean, that's a scene that will live on Dodgers highlight reels forever.
Forever. That moment, when the Dodgers were dead in the water, they were facing defeat, it completely changed everything. That bomb paved the way for Will Smith to knock in the winning run in the 11th.
And it was Rojas, a veteran utility man, a guy known for his glove, delivers the biggest hit of the year for the franchise.
That one swing justifies his entire spot on the roster and totally shifts the conversation about his value going forward. You just can't put a price tag on that kind of reliability under pressure.
And the good news for the fans in L.A., is that Rojas is reportedly eager to come back for one more season. He's the definition of a high-floor veteran who just clearly loves the environment.
He is. He's been described as a huge clubhouse presence, a reliable glove at multiple positions. Given his desire to return and his October heroics, re-signing him seems like a logical low-risk priority for the club, especially with the turnover they're facing.
Right, because even championship teams face immediate losses.
Yeah.
The churn of free agency is just constant.
That's the cold reality of the business. The Dodgers have already seen key playoff contributors leave in free agency. Justin Dean, a valuable bench piece, he left for the rival Giants.
And Ben Roethlisberger, their depth catcher, signed with the Reds.
On top of that, the team announced that veteran utility man Kike Hernandez had elbow surgery this offseason.
So that surgery for Hernandez plus Dean and Roethlisberger leaving, that immediately degrades their utility depth. It just underscores why they need Rojas back and why depth is so crucial in October. You can't win a World Series with just nine guys.
It does. And while the Dodgers have a massive war chest, I mean, $87 million is coming off their books this offseason.
$87 million.
Yeah, so they're ready to pivot to bigger market moves for a closer or another bat. But retaining that internal championship depth is vital. You can't just go out and buy Rojas Game 7 heroics on the free agent market. You have to cultivate it.
Now, contrast that with the Blue Jays. their agonizing World Series loss being one hit away seems to have positioned them as, I don't know, maybe one of the most active teams in all of free agency this winter.
Oh, for sure. They are operating with the urgency of a team that knows their window is wide open and they just need that final piece.
That loss was brutal to watch, but it shows exactly why they're going to spend big. They're not rebuilding, they're fine-tuning a near champion.
And what's really fascinating about Toronto's season is the mix they had. They weren't just built on stars like Vladdy Jr. and George Springer. We have to talk about the remarkable story of Ernie Clement.
Ah, the scrappy player who became an icon, the definition of a diamond in the rough.
This is the narrative perfected, and it ties right back to Rojas. Clement was a versatile defender who was literally picked up off the scrap heap, released by the Athletics in 2023. Few people saw him as a difference maker.
And then, fast forward 2 years, and he's a World Series hero for Toronto.
Hitting an astonishing .411 in the postseason, he went 12 for 31 in the World Series itself. This highlights something critical. Their front office found championship-level value in a player that cost them basically nothing.
That's phenomenal. It's hard to imagine a higher return on investment than a utility guy batting over .400 in the World Series. It just proves that depth isn't just about avoiding injury. It's about reliable, high-pressure performance.
It proves that building a deep roster with these high-floor, high-versatility guys can compete with any concentration of high-priced talent. That successful mix is clearly fueling Toronto's confidence heading into this offseason.
Speaking of their core, the emergence of their young pitching is even more exciting because it's cost-controlled.
The future of their rotation got a massive, maybe even unexpected, boost from Treya Savage. The 22-year-old righty had an incredible year, dominating in the minors before a huge showing in the majors, and then in October.
He set a rookie pitching record with 12 strikeouts and zero walks in a World Series game.
To have that kind of command and composure on the biggest stage at 22 is almost unheard of. It provides an immediate elite presence.
And that kind of breakout performance secures his future, regardless of who they sign this winter.
Absolutely. He's firmly penciled into the 2026 rotation alongside guys like Gausman and Bieber. And critically, he'll only earn about $820,000 next season.
Wow.
That's elite high-value innings. He's ranked as the sixth best prospect in MLB for 2026, the second highest pitcher. He's a phenomenal, high-ceiling, cost-controlled asset for the next 6 years. That frees up a lot of money to pursue a position player like Tucker.
Now let's talk about a veteran presence the Blue Jays had last year, Max Scherzer. His tenure ended in Game 7, and he's a free agent now at 41. He pitched well in that final game. But what does his market look like given his age and injury history?
Given his age, the workload, and recent injuries, which is always a factor for a pitcher in his 40s, the consensus prediction is a short deal, something like a one-year, $15 million contract.
And while the Blue Jays might still be interested for a year, the strongest prediction seems to be a return to Detroit.
Exactly. A return to where he made his name, the Detroit Tigers. It would likely be as a fifth starter or a reliever, helping them fill a need with a veteran presence and some mentorship.
A lower leverage opportunity, maybe allowing him to finish his career near home while still contributing.
That's the idea. And $15 million is substantial, but it's short enough that teams aren't terrified of a multi-year decline.
This is where it gets really interesting. Speaking of the high cost of power, that brings us to the most intriguing opt-out in the NL.
I think what's fascinating here is how the biggest contract questions this offseason are all about the power hitters. And the outcome depends less on their production, which is elite, and more on the years they're asking for.
It's all about risk management versus guaranteed output, especially past the age of 33.
And the most dramatic test case of that tension is Pete Alonso with the New York Mets. Alonso, the Mets' all-time home run leader, just opted out of his contract, even though the team missed the playoffs last year.
Opting out of guaranteed money takes immense confidence in your market value, especially for a first baseman. You're paying purely for the bat.
Well, he had massive leverage. He's coming off a career-defining platform year. In 2025, he slashed an outstanding .272, .347, .524 for a .871 OPS.
38 homers, 41 doubles, 126 RBIs.
And this is the critical part. He played all 162 games for the second straight season. That durability is like a bulletproof warranty on his production. It puts his agent, Scott Boras, in a great position to get that long-term payday.
So the Mets have Juan Soto, the perfect setup. Alonso seems like the natural fit to protect Soto in that lineup. So why the hesitation? Isn't the risk of a declining final year worth the guaranteed 4 years of elite production?
The club absolutely wants him back. The offense is undeniable. But the key conflict is that Mets management is prioritizing positional value in defense under their new directives. And Alonso, as a first baseman, is viewed internally as a negative defender, especially as he ages.
So they're afraid of committing, what, 6 years to a declining defensive player who might end up as just a DH, which limits your roster flexibility.
Precisely. The reporting suggests that if Alonso seeks more than 4 guaranteed years, the Mets may seriously consider moving on. They just don't want the risk of an aging first baseman whose defense and base running will likely decline over a 5 or 6 year deal worth maybe $180 million.
So they're asking, how much offensive certainty is worth that positional inflexibility and defensive downgrade in the later years?
Exactly. And that opens the door wide open for competitors.
Right. So who's lining up to steal the polar bear if the Mets hesitate?
This is why the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Phillies, and the Orioles are all listed as interested. If the Mets draw a line in the sand at 4 years, one of those rivals will happily swoop in and offer the fifth.
The thought of Alonso moving across town to the Yankees is just a terrifying possibility for Mets fans. It'd be a tectonic shift.
A huge shift. Okay, moving to another highly sought-after outfielder, Kyle Tucker. Toronto's ambition seems to be reaching for the stars here. They're heavily linked to the 4-time All-Star.
This absolutely fits their aggressive aim-high strategy after getting so close. They need another reliable elite bat to complement their core, and Tucker is a perfect fit.
He won his second Silver Slugger Award last year, posted a really strong 4.6 WAR. His stats cooled off a bit in the second half, but he finished hitting .266 with 22 homers and 73 RBIs. Great overall value in defense.
If Toronto lands Tucker, that would instantly make them favorites in the AL East. But why wouldn't the big New York teams jump in for a player of this caliber? If they're looking at Alonso, why not Tucker too?
This is the insider perspective that makes the most sense. The reporting suggests the Mets and Yankees are unlikely to bid aggressively for Tucker. The reasoning is all about roster fit and financial allocation.
Oh.
Both teams already have their franchise outfielders locked up long-term. Soto with the Mets, Judge with the Yankees. Adding Tucker creates a positional logjam and forces a high-value player into a DH role, which just isn't efficient spending.
So, because the Yankees need a first baseman and the Mets want to protect Soto with Alonso, the path is clearer for teams like the Blue Jays.
Correct. For the Yankees, their focus is first base or pitching. They aren't going to displace Judge. So the primary bidders beyond Toronto are expected to be the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Phillies teams with bigger needs in the outfield.
The third base market is also generating headlines, specifically with Alex Bregman, who just made a huge financial decision in Boston.
Bregman officially opted out of the final 2 years and $80 million of his contract with the Red Sox. And you have to understand, that $80 million included a lot of deferred money.
So what does opting out of deferred money signal about his confidence?
It signals absolute confidence. Deferred money means a portion of that salary gets paid out years after the contract ends. By opting out, Bregman is sacrificing that guaranteed long-term payout stream right now.
He's betting that the immediate value of a new massive contract will outweigh the security of those deferred payments.
He's chasing the total guarantee, and he's projected to get it around $150 million over 6 years. But what's maybe most compelling about his situation is the very public plea he got from a Red Sox legend to return.
David Ortiz, Big Pappy, urging Bregman to stay home.
Yes. Ortiz publicly urged him to return, highlighting his incredible leadership and team player mentality. Ortiz even mentioned watching Bregman in spring training, helping out younger guys like Rafael Devers, saying it showed tremendous selflessness.
For Boston, bringing him back would be a massive boost, not just for his production, but for that intangible value in the clubhouse as they look to capitalize on their recent wildcard success.
So what does this all mean for the other side of the ball? We're seeing a global arms race for pitching, covering everything from the back end of the bullpen to elite starters.
Pitching is the scarce resource, and teams like the Blue Jays and Dodgers are hunting high-leverage arms to solidify their championship hopes.
And nowhere is that aggression clearer than in the closer market. Two big names opted out of their deals, starting with Edwin Diaz, and they are looking for historically large contracts.
Diaz opting out of his record deal instantly made him the biggest prize on the relief market. What's the contract risk here? Relievers are notoriously volatile.
The risk is immense. Because relievers are so volatile, yet Diaz is rumored to be seeking a massive 5-year, $100 million contract.
$100 million for a closer.
If he gets that, it would completely reset the market for all future closers. The risk, though, is dedicating $20 million a year for half a decade to a guy who throws 60 innings. It's dangerous, especially if he has one injury or a drop in velocity in year 4 or 5.
But the demand is there, especially from Toronto, who desperately wants to lock down those final 3 outs.
Oh, absolutely. The Blue Jays, driven by that postseason failure, are reportedly ready to make a significant offer to get him. They saw their bullpen falter at key moments, and they want guaranteed late-inning dominance.
And the Dodgers are also interested.
Yep, the newly crowned champs. They're helped by the fact they have that $87 million coming off the books, which lets them pursue a top-tier closer without major budget issues.
But if the top guy is too pricey, the Blue Jays and Dodgers seem to have a fallback plan, which centers on veteran Raisel Iglesias.
Iglesias is drawing interest from both those clubs, making him the prime consolation prize if Diaz gets his $100 million deal. He's 36, coming off a 3.21 ERA season for the Braves.
And it's important to look at the splits in his performance, right?
Definitely. He was really inconsistent early in the season, had a near 6.00 ERA into June because of some home run issues, but then he was lights out, posting a stellar 1.96 ERA over the final 4 months.
So teams are betting on that second half form, hoping the early struggles were an anomaly.
Exactly. And for Toronto specifically, he's a valuable target because it's a strategy play. Signing Iglesias would let them use their current closer, Jeff Hoffman, who struggled with homers last year, in an earlier multi-inning leverage role.
It's a classic move. Add a high leverage arm and optimize an existing reliever spot. You solve multiple bullpen problems at once.
Right. And Iglesias is projected to get a more manageable 2-year deal, maybe around $13 million annually, which is far less restrictive than the commitment for Diaz.
Beyond domestic free agents, the pitching arms race is stretching across the globe with the posting of Japanese star Tatsuya Imai.
Imai is the Japanese phenom right-hander, and he's set to be posted. He's a coveted asset because he doesn't carry that qualified free agent draft pick penalty. Most scouts see him as a high-floor, mid-rotation arm with upside.
And his results in 2025 were certainly impressive.
Superb. He posted a 1.92 ERA over 24 starts with 178 strikeouts in about 164 innings.
That level of production guarantees heavy interest. Who's leading the charge?
The suitor race is hot. The Phillies, Yankees, Blue Jays, and Mets are all listed as leading candidates. For the Mets, Imai is particularly attractive because, like we said, he's a high-floor signing without the immediate costly penalty of losing draft picks.
Speaking of rotation needs, the Cubs are in the market after some unexpected turnover.
Yeah, the Cubs need pitching after Shuta Imanaga declined his options, which really surprised the organization and left a massive hole. Their aggressive trade target is Dylan Cease.
Which makes sense because of his durability.
Remarkable durability. He's logged 32 starts and 165 plus innings over the last 5 years, and he led MLB in strikeout percentage over the last 4. That checks 2 huge boxes, guaranteed innings and strikeout prowess.
But durability doesn't erase the performance concerns entirely. Cease has had some pretty significant consistency issues.
Right. He logged 168 innings for the Padres last year, but finished with a high 4.55 ERA. The main concerns are his high walk rate and just general inconsistency. But analysts feel his exceptional strikeout rate, the fact that he can miss bats at an elite level, gives teams confidence they can fix him.
They think they can turn him into a true frontline guy by simplifying his mechanics or focusing his pitch mix.
Basically, yeah. He's seen as a reclamation project with a huge ceiling.
Turning back to the Mets, their search for an ace is complicated by the trade market drying up and the prohibitive cost of qualified free agents.
They're expected to land at least one high-end starter, but they've hit a brick wall on the trade front. Top options that were rumored to be available are now reportedly off the block for 2026.
Like who?
Sandy Alcantara, Paul Skeens, Turk Skubal, and Hunter Green. The Marlins owner in particular has told staff he plans to have Alcantara on the roster to start 2026, so that shuts those rumors down immediately.
So if the trade market is a desert, that forces the Mets to look exclusively at free agency for top arms, and that means navigating the qualified free agent system.
And this is a major financial and structural hurdle that dictates their whole offseason strategy. They have to weigh the cost of signing qualified free agents like Framber Valdez, or maybe even Cease against the stiff penalty of losing draft picks.
For a team like the Mets, signing a QFA means losing their second and fifth highest draft picks, plus $1 million reduction from their international signing bonus pool.
Wait, why is losing those picks and that international pool money so painful for a big market team like the Mets? They have endless financial resources.
They have money, but they want young, controllable talent to sustain their success. That second highest pick is often a crucial spot for high-ceiling college talent that can move quickly. And that $1 million reduction in the international pool is critical.
That's where you find the next generation of stars.
Exactly. Losing a chunk of that budget makes it incredibly hard to compete with other big market teams who are aggressively scouting Latin America and Asia. It delays your ability to replenish the system for years. Mm. That cost makes GMs extremely hesitant, even for an ace.
We've covered the behemoths of the East and West. Now let's look at the teams in the hunt, starting with the Mariners, who are prioritizing keeping their own guys over external spending, which is a big strategic move after reaching the ALCS.
General manager Justin Hollander was very clear. Mm. After reaching Game 7 of the ALCS, the Mariners want to retain as much of their 2025 core as they can. He explicitly named first baseman Josh Naylor and infielder Jorge Polanco as priorities.
Naylor in particular seems like a necessary fit to stabilize that first base position for them long term.
He is. Hollander said they are open about their desire to keep Naylor, describing him as one of the smartest players in the league, bringing power and a low strikeout rate, fitting a position of need that has been volatile for Seattle.
The common belief is that both Naylor and Polanco are the most likely internal free agents to re-sign. They just provide instant high-floor production that would be incredibly expensive to replace on the open market.
And what's their biggest focus outside of re-signing those core players?
Bullpen help. Hollander emphasized that adding a left-handed reliever is a major focus for them, especially since Gabe Spire is currently their only lefty projected in the bullpen.
After a deep playoff run, you want to ensure the relief core is deeper and longer to account for all that extra work.
Definitely. We have to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, who finished second in the NL Cy Young race, but saw their ace get a massive snub during the All-MLB voting. This raises serious questions about how we define best.
This is one of the most staggering talking points from the entire award season. Phillies starter Christopher Sanchez was completely disregarded by the All-MLB first-team voters. Despite the snub, he finished second in the actual NL Cy Young voting and registered an incredible 8.0 BWAR.
Wait, 8.0 BWAR, and he missed the first team. For listeners who aren't constantly immersed in advanced metrics, you have to explain what 8.0 BWAR means for a pitcher and why that number is truly historic.
So BWAR is Baseball Reference Wins Above Replacement. It quantifies a player's total value compared to a replacement level player. For pitcher, an excellent season might be 5.0 WAR. A Cy Young contending season is usually 6.5 or higher.
And 8.0 BWAR is.
It's an absolutely historic generational number. It means Sanchez was 8 full wins better than a replacement pitcher. It was the highest BWAR among all pitchers in baseball and second highest overall, behind only MVP Aaron Judge.
That statistic is staggering. How structurally broken is the voting system that Max Fried, with demonstrably worse metrics, could leapfrog him?
It suggests some voters prioritize name recognition or team success over purely dominant performance metrics. Sanchez was named only to the All-MLB second team, yet he beat Fried in nearly every measurable category. Mm-hmm. Better ERA, more innings pitched, more strikeouts, fewer walks. The discrepancy is shocking.
Amid this snub, the Phillies face major free agency questions with two key veterans, Kyle Schwarber and JT Realmuto. Schwarber was the MVP runner-up. He seems like the obvious priority given his power.
This is where the internal debate gets interesting. Schwarber was indeed the NL MVP runner-up, leading the NL with 56 home runs. However, an insider argument suggests the Phillies must prioritize re-signing veteran catcher JT Realmuto, even over Schwarber's historic power.
But Schwarber delivers historic power. Can a team really afford to let that kind of production walk just because they can't find another catcher?
The argument comes down to market leverage and defensive value. The catching market this offseason is extremely weak. Realmuto, despite an offensive decline, remains a two-time Gold Glove winner and expertly guides that talented pitching staff.
The reality is you can probably find 40 home runs on the free agent market, but you cannot easily replace an elite defensive catcher who handles a pitching staff and has his unique athleticism and experience.
They argue he's far and away the best catcher available, and they have no replacement ready behind the plate.
Shifting gears to the Pittsburgh Pirates, the narrative around the organization has long been, as Pat McAfee recently said, an historical unwillingness to spend money, which frustrates fans who see talent wasted.
The perception of the Pirates being one of baseball's most profitable teams, while historically refusing to invest in their roster, has been a massive source of fan frustration. They have star talent, like Cy Young winner Paul Skenes, but never build around it.
So is the Cy Young win finally forcing a change in philosophy?
Rumor suggests yes. Sources indicate the organization is expected to add at least $30 million to their payroll for 2026 to build a competitive team around Paul Skenes.
While $30 million might seem small in the context of the Dodgers or Yankees for the Pirates, this marks a significant departure from their typical spending habits. It indicates a genuine attempt to contend while Skenes is under team control.
The Twins, meanwhile, are focused on internal management with the Rule 5 draft deadline on November 18th. They have some tough protection decisions to make for their 40-man roster.
They cleared space on their 40-man roster early, leaving 7 open spots. Teams have to protect any player eligible for the Rule 5 draft or risk losing them for a minimal cost. The Twins have 4 absolute givens to add before the deadline.
Non-negotiable protections. So who are those 4 key prospects they can't risk losing?
They include left-handed pitchers Connor Prelip and Kendry Rojas, right-hander Andrew Morris, and outfielder Gabriel Gonzalez. Prelip is especially high ceiling, finally staying healthy for over 80 innings between AA and AAA.
Tell me more about Gabriel Gonzalez. I know he's a key piece from recent trade.
He is the last remaining piece of the Jorge Polanco trade with Seattle, so losing him would be a disaster for that trade's return. Gonzalez had a major rebound year, posting a .909 OPS in 2025 with 15 home runs. He's a high-ceiling prospect they cannot afford to lose.
So protecting these 4 means their 40-man roster will be nearly full, limiting their free agency flexibility a bit, but correctly prioritizing their own organizational talent.
Exactly. Finally, we have some structural news around the league and a few noteworthy personnel and disciplinary items.
On the organizational side, the Seidler family is exploring a potential sale of the Padres. This is significant given the volatile spending and management over the last few years in San Diego. New ownership could mean a total philosophy shift.
Meanwhile, the Orioles, after a successful 2025, have made a key coaching hire, bringing in former Nationals interim manager Miguel Cairo as their infield coach.
We also have news about a veteran pitcher who plans to return next season, potentially offering some depth.
Yes, veteran swingman Erasmo Ramirez, who is 34, plans to pitch in 2026 and is currently training as a starter. He offers valuable flexibility. He's likely best suited for a swingman role, which could appeal to teams needing reliable multi-inning depth without committing major payroll.
And lastly, a serious piece of league disciplinary news concerning 2 prominent relievers.
Emmanuel Kliss and Luis Ortiz have both been indicted on gambling charges. This adds a serious note to the offseason, reminding everyone of the strict rules surrounding player involvement with sports betting, regardless of whether they bet on baseball or other sports.
To synthesize what we've discussed, the baseball landscape is just incredibly dynamic right now. You have the Blue Jays and the Dodgers aggressively addressing their World Series outcomes.
And Toronto in particular is showing massive ambition, targeting top-tier talents like Kyle Tucker and Edwin Diaz.
And the major market decisions around Pete Alonso and the top relievers will dictate the movement of the entire league. The decision on a 4-year versus a 5-year deal for Alonso could send him to a division rival,
which would create a massive ripple effect in the first base market. At the same time, the Mets' decision on whether to incur QFA penalties for a top starter or go after less costly international talent like Tatsuya Imai will shape their rotation for years.
What stands out most profoundly, though, is the juxtaposition between the extreme high-end spending $150 million for Bregman, $100 million rumored for Diaz, and the incredible value found in unheralded players.
That's the constant tension in baseball that GMs have to manage. We talk about the massive, decade-long contracts sought by Alonso, but then you look at the success stories of utility players. Miguel Rojas delivering the game-tying World Series Game 7 home run at minimal cost.
Or Ernie Clements, who was picked up off the scrap heap and hit .411 in the postseason. They weren't the stars, but they were the difference makers in the crucial moments of the 2025 season.
They offered extraordinary return on investment when the pressure was highest. Exactly. This highlights baseball's constant tension between stars and depth. The question GMs face is, do I buy a $100 million closer, or do I use that money to sign 10 players like Rojas and Clement?
So here is the final provocative thought for you to mull over. The success stories of these utility players, Rojas and Clement, winning the World Series, it suggests that depth players and high-quality utility value are being significantly undervalued by the market compared to sluggers.
So will the league actually learn from Toronto's and LA's championship paths? Will they start prioritizing these high-floor, high-versatility depth players in the coming years?
Or will the bidding wars for a limited number of aging, high-power stars just intensify, driven by fan excitement and marketing dollars, leaving teams vulnerable when those unexpected, cost-controlled heroes are needed most in October.
A truly fascinating question that we will see answered over the next few weeks as these big contracts get signed. We'll be watching to see if GMs pivot toward that Clement and Rojas model of value, or if they continue chasing the huge power bats this offseason.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the 2026 baseball offseason.
Until next time.